We'll hear arguments next in Vaughn and others against Bromidian Corporation, number 1819. Whenever you're ready.
Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the court. This matter involves a system of artificial canals in extreme southern Louisiana. Their construction was begun in 1942 and it continues to this moment. They are generally 60 feet wide by 8 feet in depth and run from the Gulf Intracoastal Waterway on the north to the Gulf of Mexico on the south, and cover an area approximately 15 to 20 miles wide from east to west. They are affected by tidal action. They connect, among other waterways, with the Gulf Intracoastal Waterway, with the Freshwater Bayou Canal, with the Gulf of Mexico, with Vermilion Bay on the east, and with Oyster Bayou and Rollover Bayou on the west. They are, we believe, navigable in fact, and to satisfy all tests of navigability heretofore put forth by this court. It was, I believe, most of those facts, with the exception of connection to the Gulf, that I've just recited are undisputed between the parties. It was, however, the subject of vehement dispute in the court below as to whether or not the actual building of these canals in fact impaired and in some cases destroyed the navigability of pre-existing natural canals in the area. Since the case was disposed of in the trial court on summary judgment, there was no opportunity for the making of much of a record on that point. Nevertheless, the petitioners submitted an affidavit in opposition to the motion for summary judgment that said, for example, that the old freshwater bayou, which coursed from Pecan Island, Louisiana, small municipality on a little stretch of terra firma in the middle of marshland, the old freshwater bayou coursed from there to the Gulf of Mexico and was used, among other things, to transport the United States mail. And
Counsel, if these maps are to be of any utility, it would be helpful if you'd indicate physically at the appropriate time, whenever you wish, what areas we're talking about.
All right. The map, if Your Honor please, was offered by the Vermilion Corporation with our consent. The only general deficiency of the map is that it does not, so far as I know, show absolutely the entirety of the canal system. The bottom of the photograph, of course, is the Gulf of Mexico. The most prominent...
Where generally is the land area that we're talking about?
Yes, sir. Yes, Your Honor. The most prominent waterway coursing northerly from the Gulf is on the east or right side of the photograph, and that is Freshwater Bayou. The most prominent entrance of the artificial system into Freshwater Bayou is shown approximately 6 inches up in the photograph from the Gulf and entering into the most prominent north-south waterway. You will see at least three artificial canals. They are absolutely straight, approximately 6 inches to the left of the Freshwater Bayou Canal, which enter into the Gulf of Mexico. What you cannot see in the north is the Gulf Intracoastal Waterway.
Help me. The difference between a canal and a bayou.
Being from South Louisiana and being from somewhere else, a bayou is a small...
It's a bayou that's 20 or 30 feet deep.
A bayou is, generally speaking, a small, fairly slow-moving body of water which according to its depth might well be called a river in other places. Generally speaking, however, the term bayou refers to that which is natural. I've never heard an artificial body of water referred to by that term in Louisiana or anywhere else to my knowledge.
The canal is not natural, right?
The freshwater bayou canal is not...
Bayou canal?
The freshwater bayou canal is a canal which was built from 1964 to 1968 generally, but not entirely, over the course of the old freshwater bayou. When I refer to freshwater bayou, I'm referring to the old natural body of water. Freshwater bayou canal, on the other hand, is not an entirely natural body of water and is not directly involved in this case.
Well, how deep are these bayou canals?
Well, the artificial canals, which are the subject of this lawsuit, are generally 8 feet deep. They are somewhat shallower in at points, but virtually the entirety of the system is generally 8 feet deep by 60 feet wide. Now,
and generally speaking, the basic difference between a bayou and a canal is that a bayou is natural and a canal is man-made, isn't
it?
That's
correct. That's correct. Plaintiffs were sued. Plaintiffs are residents of Pecan Island, Louisiana, and among other things, are alleged to have supplemented their incomes by shrimping in, among other places, the artificial canals prepared by the respondents. The plaintiffs were sued under the Louisiana State Trespass Law by Vermilion Corporation for, among other things, an injunction. The plaintiffs have defended by saying in the trial court that these waters, the waters of the artificial canal system, were impressed with a navigation servitude and were navigable waters of the United States, and thus that there could be no private appropriation by injunction or otherwise to keep citizens of the United States from being able to navigate same. Second, the petitioners defended in the trial court by saying that the mere filing of a lawsuit and the attempted maintenance of an injunction against public exercise of the navigation servitude was ipso facto an obstruction under the Rivers and Harbors Act and was prohibited. Petitioners finally say in this court that the Louisiana Organic Act, which states generally that the navigable waters leading into the Gulf of Mexico shall be forever free to the citizens, also applies and prohibits the doing of that which Vermilion Corporation was allowed to do by the Louisiana state court system. The position of the Louisiana courts is, as I read it, quite simple. The Louisiana courts found that these artificial canals were navigable, in fact, that they connected to various interstate marine highways of commerce, including the Gulf of Mexico and the Gulf Intracoastal Waterway, and that they did support and were capable of supporting various kinds of commerce themselves. Nevertheless, it was the position of the Louisiana court system that a canal system built on private property with private funds is a private thing, period. The questions which we believe are raised by this proceeding are: does the navigation servitude in favor of members of the public automatically arise and exist on navigable waters of the United States? Secondly, and perhaps of somewhat less importance, but nevertheless before this court, the questions involving the Rivers and Harbors Act and the Louisiana Organic Act, do they apply to preclude the respondents' essential appropriation of these canals to private use? Finally, the question, is an artificial canal built with private funds on private lands, but which is navigable in fact and connected to other interstate highways of commerce, and which in its building destroyed pre-existing natural navigable canals. A navigable water of the United States impressed with a navigation servitude.
But you say that last issue is the facts underlying the premise are in dispute.
Very much.
You told us that earlier.
Yes, sir.
So how can we decide that question?
The point of law was simply rejected by the Louisiana court system.
Said even assuming that they had.
Yes, sir. I believe the decision of the Louisiana Court of Appeal, Third Circuit, is pointed in that regard, that it simply would make no difference whether I prove that or not.
Well, if we rejected your first point and then came to your last point, rejected your first two, came to your last, we would have to remand to the Louisiana court, wouldn't we?
I believe so.
And if we, even if we agreed with you.
I believe so.
Yeah.
Well, if we agreed with them, we'd just affirm them.
If you agreed with the Louisiana court system in its entirety, yes, sir. But Mr. Justice,
in order to remand, we'd have to disagree with him on the last point.
Yes, sir.
That's right.
Or at least we would have to agree that the question, which they said was a factual question, was immaterial, was material, and it would have to be found one way or the other by a trier of fact.
Exactly.
On that point, as I understand your theory, is that if they interfered with, say, if they built a new canal X and that had an impact on an old canal Y, that was hurt. You're saying that's the factual issue of it. Do you have an interest in the navigation on canal Y? I wonder if you have any standing to complain about what they may have done to that other canal.
I guess it was a bio. As a member of the public, as a citizen of the United States, in whose favor the navigation servitude on navigable waters of the United States runs.
But isn't the fight here about shrimping in the area that's been built rather than navigating in the area that may have been impaired?
But if the pre-existing natural navigable waterway had impressed on it a navigation servitude and they appropriate that servitude by a destruction of that waterway, it is our position that equitably the navigation servitude must be transposed onto the new system. And I believe there is authority for that in this court in Philadelphia Company v. Stimson.
I see. You've got a substitute. This is a substitute for the old, and you're entitled
yes,
for that.
Philadelphia Company v. Stimson is 223 U.S. 605.
Now, Mr. Hill, your first two points, at least, depend entirely upon the fact that this is water, doesn't it?
Yes, sir.
In other words, your argument would in no way assert that if I own land 2 miles from an interstate highway and build a 2-mile driveway from my property to the interstate highway, that driveway belonged to the public, or at least that the public had open and free access to it. Would you?
I would not at all, sir.
It depends entirely upon the fact these are water. Except for the fact that these are water, this case is very much like my hypothetical case, isn't it?
Yes. The in order for waterways to have any reason to be and to have any usefulness, they have to be as they were in this case. They have to literally be born out of the public's water. They have to be tied to other interstate highways of commerce as they were in this case. They must have the public's water to exist. They, in their existence, may well affect the navigable integrity and capacity of other public waterways. None of that is true in the case of roads.
There's an affidavit that this has always been open to the public.
That is an ancillary disputed issue. You're quite correct about that, Mr. Justice Marshall.
But you didn't get any more than that. That is disputed.
Yeah. My point, and in one of my earlier briefs, I don't know if it's in my brief to this court, that is a little bit of an interesting sidelight. My point is that Louisianians, for example, have gone on their merry way for years with people in my client's positions, in the petitioner's positions, thinking it was, generally speaking, fine for them to navigate these canals or those like them, whereas people in the position of the respondents and others similarly situated have thought that they had an absolute right to keep them out. this case has never, to my knowledge, been presented in a federal context. The only jurisprudential dealings in it have been under the Louisiana state law.
It could be that the public was only there by suffering.
That is their contention. Mm-hmm. We of course vehemently dispute that. The congressional power to regulate, it is thought to be an important issue of this case as to whether or not the standard for determination of navigable waters of the United States in regulation cases under the Commerce Clause is the same as the standard for navigation servitude cases.
Or whether or not admiralty jurisdiction is applicable.
I would concede...
Or a variety of other applications.
I would concede, as primarily an admiralty lawyer, that does present a different question for, I think, a large number of reasons. I do not, however, feel that the argument has merit when only congressional power to regulate under the Commerce Clause as applied to waterways, on the one hand, and the navigation servitude on the other, are concerned.
You think navigable waters of the United States means navigable waters belonging to the United States or navigable waters located anywhere in the United States?
Navigable waters of the United States, as Ms. Oberly said this morning, belong to no one.
Well, what do you think the phrase means was my question.
It means two things. Number one, it means navigable waters, waterways which are navigable, in fact, either in their natural ordinary condition or...
Located anywhere in the United States?
Located anywhere in the United States.
Now, certainly it doesn't mean that if it's entirely within a single state.
No, if it is located entirely within a single state and connects to other bodies of water that lead to interstate waters, then it is of the United States, that it is in interstate commerce. The phrase of the United States I take to mean waters that are in, that burden or affect or have something to do with interstate commerce. I'm sorry I didn't follow the thrust of your question, but certainly I would agree with that. Fact is, as we see it, that the navigation servitude and the congressional power to regulate waterways are, in one sense, coterminous or are identical. Until really a very few years ago, congressional regulation of waterways, to my knowledge, had, if not exclusively, at least predominantly one object, and that was the protection of a public right to navigate. Other reasons for the exercise of congressional regulatory power as applied to waterways, for example, pollution control, are really fairly recent considerations. From the time of Gibbons versus Ogden, as I appreciate the law, the navigation servitude and the congressional power to regulate waterways have been treated as part and parcel of the same thing. If they have, and if that is correct, then we feel that the respondent's argument that there is a difference and that a different standard should be applied simply has no merit. And if it has no merit, Appalachian Electric Power versus United States would seem to us here to apply. Appalachian Electric Power says that waterways which may be rendered navigable with reasonable improvement are navigable waters of the United States. We submit that there is no difference, practically and factually, between digging a canal off of the intracoastal waterway or digging a canal that connects with the Gulf, and on the other hand, artificial improvement of the New River, which in its natural state was no good for any sort of navigation whatsoever. They both require exactly the same sort of acts and expenditure of money and doing of work and the, generally speaking, same sorts of human activity as are required here. And the result is the same. A new body of water over which interstate commerce may be transacted. If your honors have no further questions, I would like to reserve the balance of my time.
Very well. Mr. McCall.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court, if I may go back a moment and refer to this aerial photograph. This photograph is not part of the record. It is purely an aid to assist your honors in seeing what it is we're talking about.
But there's no disagreement about it.
There's no disagreement about it, except that I would like to point out several things with respect to it.
We were told, Mr. McCall, that it was offered in evidence. I gather then it was not received in evidence?
It was not offered in evidence, as I understand it, Your Honor. I think that was a mistake.
No, I'm not saying what you told us, but what your brother told us. He said it was offered in evidence.
I don't think he meant that, because it was not offered at the trial.
That's what he did say.
It is purely, as I say, an aid for oral argument. And so that Your Honors will know what it is we're talking about, I am informed that the dimensions of this are approximately 10 miles to a side. And the principal aspect of this to which we would respectfully invite the court's attention is the number of canals which dead end. And that is explained by the fact that the great majority of these canals were dredged for the purpose of mineral development. The nature of the land here, which, as you can see, is on the Gulf Coast and is swamp land, is such that it is not possible to get a drilling rig in other than by floating it in. And this explains the shape of these canals and the fact that they all terminate at some point. The only canal which was dredged by the engineers is, as counsel has pointed out, that canal which extends on the right-hand side of the photograph in pretty much a straight line and has taken the place that's known as Freshwater Bayou Canal, and it to a large extent takes the place of former Freshwater Canal.
For purposes of this case, Mr. McCall, would it make any difference whether the canals were dredged for oil rigs or steamboats?
Not in the least, Your Honor. Not in the least. Except to this extent, as long as it is understood that the dredging of these canals was accomplished for private purposes for use of the land. In no sense, with the exception of the Freshwater Bayou Canal, which I have mentioned, were they dredged for general use. They are there either to gain access to oil well locations, to trap lines, to access to hunting leases and places like that. But other than that, Your Honor is quite right. It makes no difference.
McCall, with respect to the canal that was dredged to replace a pre-existing bayou, yes. You don't challenge their right to use that canal.
No, sir. That's a public canal.
Yeah.
That was dredged by the Corps of Engineers in pursuant to a servitude which we gave them for that purpose. But that canal is not at issue in this case.
Where did that canal go?
That canal goes from the Gulf of Mexico, which shows at the bottom of the map, to Vermilion Bay, which is up to the right and off the map, or off the photograph.
Vermilion Bay is part of the ocean?
It's a bay from the Gulf of Mexico, and to that extent it is part of the ocean, yes, Your Honor.
If private funds had dredged that canal, suppose the canal had never reached Vermilion Bay, but private funds dredged it and extended it to Vermilion Bay. Would you be making the same argument about that canal?
We would be making... Do you mean the same argument we're presently making about that canal or about
could you keep
other
the public canal? Out of that canal?
We would contend, Your Honor, that we were entitled to keep the public out of that canal. I qualify that.
What about, would Congress have the power to require you to let the public in, say for a price?
I have no question about that. I think Congress' power is paramount if it can show a public purpose, it can appropriate just about anything it wants, provided it pays for it.
But would they have to pay you for it?
In our opinion, they would, Your Honor.
So you would say that Congress could not pass a statute that required you to let the public into this canal system that is presently at issue?
That's precisely our position, Your Honor.
Mr. McCall, what about the factual dispute referred to by the Louisiana Court of Appeals on page A10 of the petition, where they say that the defendants contend there is a factual dispute, and the factual dispute is that artificial waterways destroyed the navigability of surrounding natural waterways? Now, the Court of Appeals, I understood, said Louisiana law does not make that factual dispute material in a legal sense, but there is that factual dispute between you and your opponents, is there not?
We do not concede, Your Honor, that there does exist such a factual dispute. The basis of that dispute is the affidavit which appears at page 54 of the record, 54A of the appendix. And if Your Honors will examine that affidavit carefully, bearing in mind that affidavits are not drafted by the affiance, but by counsel, you will observe that that affidavit does not create an issue of fact. Look particularly at the last paragraph of this affidavit.
What page?
Page 54A of the appendix, Mr. Justice Powell. If you will examine the last paragraph of that affidavit, it begins, "Prior to the development of the Humboldt Canal system, deponents are aware that various portions of the natural navigable waterway, etc." The law of Louisiana is quite clear. When you're opposing a motion for summary judgment, you must make an affidavit that fairly meets the affidavits or the representations made by the moving party, and it must be made on personal knowledge.
But that isn't the answer that the Louisiana Court of Appeals gave. They treated it, as I read their opinion, as a permissible affidavit, and simply said legally it was insufficient.
Well, may I come to that? And
sure.
I think I should, since Your Honor has asked the question. The answer which the Court of Appeals gave in Louisiana is to be found in an earlier decision by the courts of Louisiana, the Supreme Court of Louisiana, which is cited, I believe, in both briefs, in Ilhenny v. Broussard. That was a case involving another situation wherein access was sought to private canal. And what the court held there was that even though it were established that there had been destruction of or impediment to the use of an existing canal, that would not of itself give the public the right to use the canals which had effected that destruction or substitution. And the reasoning for that was that the whole matter of navigable waterways was given over by Congress to the Secretary of War and delegated by him to the Corps of Engineers. And what they said was that the recourse which anyone had, if he had any, in a situation such as that, was to the Corps of Engineer, and that unless and until the Corps acted on this matter, that there was nothing to come before the court. And it was with reference to that decision that the Court of Appeal in this case held that if that were a fact, if that fact were established, that then this would not be dispositive, because it was first requisite that these respondents, or these petitioners, I stand corrected, these petitioners should make application to the Corps of Engineer to declare that this was a waterway which had been obstructed. And I think it is quite clear under the Rivers and Harbors Act that it is the duty of the engineers to enforce the provisions of that act, and where there has been any sort of impediment or any sort of action contrary to the provisions of the Act, it is incumbent on the engineers to act. And that, I think, was the answer which the Court of Appeal of Louisiana gave. Is that responsive to Your Honor's question?
Yes, it is.
Let me say that I mention the other aspect of it because I think it is desirable, that is, the insufficiency of the affidavit, because I think it is desirable for this court to understand that no real issue of fact has been created by this affidavit under our Louisiana procedure. But I think the substantial answer is that which lies in the holding of the court of Louisiana in Ilhenny against Broussard. Now, if I may, Your Honor, let me say that I think the critical question and the critical area of inquiry in this case is, what are we talking about when we're talking about navigable bodies of water? It is our contention that the power of Congress under the Commerce Clause over navigable waters is one thing. The navigation servitude is quite another. The navigation servitude...
Well, you're separating the Rivers and Harbors Act, for example, from the other questions. Is that part of it?
Well, the Rivers and Harbors Act...
Pollution control, for example.
That
impediments to navigation.
We are separating them in this sense, Mr. Chief Justice, which is that, as we appreciate it, Congress' power to enact the Rivers and Harbors Act stems from the Commerce Clause. And it is in the exercise of its power under the Commerce Clause that it does legislate with respect to pollution, to flood control, to recreation, to those matters on which Congress has legislated. But what we say, and we believe that this is central to the whole controversy, is that the so-called servitude of navigation is only one aspect of Congress' power over navigable waters generally. So coming back to a question which was addressed by one of your honors to counsel, what is a navigable water? We would suggest to your honors that the answer to that depends on what your inquiry is. Because if you're talking about the servitude of navigation, that is one thing. If you're talking about, say, flood control, or if you're talking about something like that, it is another. Now, what is the...
If you're talking about a navigational servitude, that has nothing to do with congressional action. And the second query is, if you're talking about congressional power under the Commerce Clause, isn't that what you mean?
Precisely, Your Honor. When I say, however, that it has nothing to do with it, I would accept counsel's statement that Congress power through the Commerce Clause over navigation, as it were, protects the servitude of navigation.
But there exists a servitude with or without congressional action.
Precisely. And that servitude is fairly precisely defined in a number of decisions of this court.
And we were told in the earlier case that, that this stems from the common law of England adopted by the colonies of the United States and carried forward as a matter of national impact in our the Commerce Clause of our Constitution. But it has nothing to do with congressional power under the Commerce Clause. Isn't that correct?
Precisely. That is our point, and that we believe that that is important to the resolution of the issues raised in this case. Now, the servitude of navigation is not coextensive with Congress power over commerce. It is limited. And the servitude of navigation is with relation to streams which are naturally navigable, or, as the phrase is sometimes used, in their normal or natural condition. Now, the distinction is important for this reason, that when Congress acts through its delegate, the Corps of Engineers, with respect to the area covered by the servitude of navigation, no compensation is necessary. And the reason for that is that the riparian owner has rights in that part of the stream which is covered, or the bank which is covered by the servitude of navigation, which is an imperfect right. He has a qualified title, and the qualification to that title is that the national power, Congress, may appropriate that portion of the stream which is subject to the servitude of navigation without any compensation whatsoever. Conversely, however, although there may be areas which are beyond the reach of the servitude of navigation, they may be appropriated by Congress in its exercise of its power over commerce, for example, flood control or something like that, but it must then pay just compensation. I think that possibly the best illustration of that is in the United States against Kansas City Life Company case. That was a case, Your Honors will recall, where there was a flood control or a dam which was constructed. And the consequence of that was that the water backed up. And the water backed up not only as to the banks of the river, that portion covered by the navigable servitude, but it backed up well beyond that onto fast land. And the holding of that case was that compensation was due to the extent that fast land was covered by the waters which had backed up. I think that one case, and there are several like that, illustrates possibly more clearly than any other the limits of the servitude of navigation. Now, coming back to this proposition that the servitude of navigation extends to waters in their natural and normal condition, it is true that this court and other courts has and have on occasion said that waters which may be in their normal or natural state are subject to reasonable improvement. But I would pose to Your Honors the question of how construction of a canal on what was formerly fast land could possibly be considered to be reasonable improvement.
If reasonable improvement of navigation, is that what you're saying?
Of the stream itself, or of the navigability of the stream, yes, sir. That is the point.
Well, it's conceivable, isn't it, that you could have a navigable stream 20 feet wide, and the Corps of Engineers would decide that it would be a better navigable stream if it were 40 feet wide, and as a result, they would have to take 10 feet of fast land off of each side of the stream. Now, in a case like that, I take it they would have to pay compensation.
We would so contend, Your Honor, and we believe the cases so dictate. Now, the point of the navigation servitude is that if I, for example, have my grist mill on the bank of that stream, and the engineers take part of that stream and set it back so that I can't have my grist mill anymore, they must compensate me for my mill. But they don't have to compensate me for the fact that I can no longer use the power from that stream. And that, it seems to us, is one of the most critical aspects of this case. That what we're talking about here is there a servitude of navigation on these artificially constructed canals? The record is quite clear that these canals were all constructed on private land by private individuals with private funds.
Mr. McCall, can I interrupt you?
Of course,
for a second. In Mr. Justice Rehnquist's question about adding 20 feet to a canal or to a navigable stream, the extra 20 feet that were added would be navigable and would be subject to the servitude, would they not?
It would indeed.
So your definition of naturally navigable waters wouldn't really be adequate to cover that extra 20 feet.
That would come within reasonable improvement, as I appreciate it, Your Honor.
But then isn't the question here whether this is a reasonable improvement?
Well, we take the position, and we believe that it's a sound one, that where you dig your canal from scratch, so to speak, that you're not reasonably improving the navigability of a stream.
Of course, all these have always been hooked up to navigable water, so they've just enlarged what started out as a lesser body of navigable water.
No, sir. That's not correct, sir. These canals, there was nothing where these canals were before. If you will examine this plat, you will observe that the shape of these canals is such that it is quite clear that they were artificially created. They go in straight lines. They don't follow any sort of contour.
Didn't they always hook up to some navigable bayou or canal? Otherwise, how will you have gotten the equipment into them?
Well, yes, in the same way that my driveway in my country estate connects with a highway.
Right.
Because that's the whole purpose of it. Now, if I may call it, if you will, a digression, I would like to address the suggestion which is made by counsel that what we have done is that we have destroyed or impaired the usability of existing streams, which ties in a little bit with your question, Mr. Justice Stevens. And we would say as to that, that there is nothing in the record to support that contention. The deposition which is given by Mr. Donahue, who was the manager of Respondent, is to the effect that the only stream which has only body of water or bayou which has been interfered with is former freshwater bayou, which has been replaced by the canal which the Corps of Engineers constructed. And I would refer, Your Honors, to Freshwater Bayou Canal, which is the wide canal coming from the Gulf proceeding up. This photograph is oriented with north at the top. Goes up north, and just at the juncture with the canal which goes off to the left, Your Honors will see this, obviously, natural waterway, which was Freshwater Bayou. Now, Freshwater Bayou, as can be seen from that, is no longer usable, but not by reason of any canal constructed by the respondent, but purely by construction of the Engineers Canal, Freshwater Bayou Canal, to which, as I said in an earlier question, public access is given.
But this gets back to the Louisiana Court of Appeals statement that at least the defendants claimed, whether factually, correctly, or otherwise, that your system of artificial waterways destroyed the navigability of surrounding natural waterways. And they didn't reject that as a saying it's factually untrue. They said whether factually true or not, it doesn't make any difference under Louisiana law.
I must confess that is correct, Your Honor.
Or under federal law.
They did say that. But my point is that had they chosen to have done so, they could have gone further and said that there is not a sufficient factual issue here to present this to us for disposition. What they said instead was that predominating the question of whether there is such an issue, it would not make any difference as a matter of law.
Right.
Precisely as Your Honor has said.
That even if the defendants are correct about that. Even if the petitioners in this case are correct, that's what the Court of Appeals said.
Yes, that's correct, Your Honor. They do say that.
Nonetheless the same.
That's what the opinion reads.
Right.
But as I say, we say that beyond that, that there is no such issue. And that whereas this is what the court said, that the court could just as well have said, there is no such issue.
Yeah, but it didn't.
Quite right. And I won't labor that point because I think that's quite clear, that they did not say that. But addressing this question, and again, we would respectfully refer, Your Honors, to our brief, the testimony which is submitted by Mr. Donahue is that there were no obstruction of existing canals by any, or existing bayous, by any canal constructed by the respondent. There is considerable silting up of the entrances to what were formerly openings to the Gulf by virtue of silt which comes from the Atchafalaya River. I believe one member of the court asked where this is. If you will examine the small, very small map of Louisiana, which is on the bottom in the margin, it will be seen that this is slightly to the west of the center of the coast of Louisiana, and it lies about, I'm told, 40 miles west of the mouth of the Atchafalaya River. The currents there are such, that the silt which is brought down by the Atchafalaya River has deposited large amounts in front of this land and has caused obstruction to reaching the Gulf through this. Now, let me just say, and I think I'm running a little bit short on my time, let me say that it should be borne in mind that these canals do not form in any sense a means of interstate commerce. They do not in any sense form a continuing passage from a place in one state to another, or indeed a body of water which is normally used or is capable of use for interstate commerce. As appears from this aerial photograph, and as is testified, these canals serve no purpose other than to serve points within the respondent's property.
Well, that's their present use.
That's correct.
But since they are connected with the Gulf of Mexico and the, what's it called, the waterway to the north.
Intercoastal waterway.
Intercoastal waterway. They certainly could serve a utility as avenues of interstate commerce. If somebody wanted to get in a small boat with a draft of less than 8 feet, he could go from any one of these canals anywhere.
Well, it depends on what you mean by that, Your Honor. They do not connect the Gulf with the intracoastal waterway. If you wanted to go from, say, a well location out through the freshwater bayou canal, either to the Gulf or to the intracoastal waterway, you could do that. But all of these canals, without exception, dead end, none of them connect a body of water which carries on commerce with another body.
Then what's this case about? These canals did give access to interstate waters.
They do at one end, but I'll tell you what this case is about, and I appreciate the opportunity of doing so. This case is about the desire of these petitioners to fish and shrimp in the private canals of respondents. The claim is cloaked in the guise of seeking to exercise that right of navigation, which is normally available for people in commerce. But that's not what this case is about. What they want is they want to come in and harvest shrimp and fish from our canal.
That's what these petitioners may want to do. But if they're correct, and if it's open to the public as for general navigation, then I'd understood that the facts of the matter are, and as I look at this map, my understanding is confirmed, that some of these canals have access to interstate waterways.
Only through freshwater bayou.
Well, whatever
canal.
Through.
I beg your pardon?
Whatever it's through.
Indirectly, you can get from each one of these to the Gulf.
Right.
Or to the
and you can get from the Gulf to anywhere.
That's correct. But when you get there, or when you start, where are you coming from? You're coming from an oil well location. You're coming from a trapping line or something like that. But it cannot be denied that ultimately you can get from these to a public waterway. But the point, if I may conclude very briefly, is simply that what we're talking about here is this so-called servitude of navigation, which we contend does not apply to an completely artificially created body of water. It's applicable only to waters which are in their natural condition or have been improved to a reasonable extent. If there are no other questions, Your Honor, thank you.
Very well, Mr. Hill, do you have something further?
Yes, Mr. Chief Justice. It is, admittedly, not at all the province of this court to deal with whether or not there is factual dispute. Nevertheless, the court should be aware that as part of the record, I believe it's either pages 44 or 45 of Mr. John Donahue's deposition,
there is an indication that the old natural body of water, freshwater bayou, did course all the way from Pecan Island to the Gulf and was once open from Pecan Island to the Gulf. Second, although not part of the record, there is mentioned in the government's amicus at page 32, the footnote on page 32, that the Corps of Engineers, a Corps of Engineers report on this matter, indicates that when plans were submitted to the Corps by the ancestors entitled of the Vermilion Corporation first to build their canals, that those plans show artificial canals which were planned and designed to intersect old natural bodies of water.
If you have freshwater bodies of water which are not subject to federal servitude but are linked on either end so that they do ultimately connect with the interstate water, does that alter the status of the freshwater pond, lake, whatever it might be?
In other words, if one had, regardless of its origin, a body of water that connected on both ends to waterways, which in turn were part of the system of interstate marine commerce, I think those would be, if Your Honor please, navigable waters in the United States, burdened with a navigation servitude. If they are also in and of themselves navigable, in fact.
Yes. Well, of course, they wouldn't be putting, chances are they wouldn't be putting canals in on either end if they weren't navigable.
That's correct, but there is a twofold
thing. That converts the state riparian interest into a federal by that linkage.
The riparian interest, not in its entirety,
becomes subject to federal servitude.
The waterway does. The waterway does, yes. But not. I think, for example, the swamp of creations, derelictions, relictions, and all would still be governed by the state law. If the navigation servitude, as it does, exists for the benefit of the people of the United States, and I believe in one of the older cases in the jurisprudence of this court, Illinois Central v. State of Illinois, which is cited in my brief, indicates that it does. That does not require the Corps of Engineers for its execution. Furthermore, it seems to me almost ludicrous to say that a private party can sue another private party to keep him out of what may be navigable waterways, and that private party is precluded from defending his lawsuit because previously he has not gone to the Corps of Engineers to declare the waterway open. That is the thrust of Mr. McCall's argument. We were sued. We had to defend a lawsuit. And we defend by saying the right of use existed before this lawsuit was brought and does not depend upon the Corps to execute it. The navigation servitude has never been the subject of restrictions and prohibitions by virtue of the action of the Fifth Amendment on it, for the simple reason that the navigation servitude on navigable waters, however created, is something that the people already have.
Well, that's almost tautological in light of cases like Kansas City Life, isn't it? Because they have been, the government has been required to pay compensation, and perhaps you can say it's because the navigational servitude didn't extend that far. But certainly there are limits to which Congress can't go beyond without paying money for taking land.
I agree with that, but when, unlike the Kansas City Life case, when the private owner of land takes it upon himself to create a system of waterways, how? By tying them into navigable waters of the United States, then he has, by his own act, caused a navigation servitude to be impressed upon the waters. He does not lose ownership of his land. of the land underlying it. And that, it seems to me, is a crucial difference. Nobody forces a Vermilion Corporation or an Exxon Company USA to dig canals which are A, navigable in themselves, and which B, tie into other interstate marine highways of commerce, and which owe their very existence to the water and the gradients and the levels of flow that they get from the navigable water.
But if the Appalachian Power Company test is correct, then a river which is not at all capable of being navigated at the present time, and which no private riparian owner has indicated any intent to improve, to make navigable, is nonetheless subject to the navigational servitude. So it can't be just a question of whether the owner chooses to tie into a navigational system.
With all due respect to you, sir, I think that those are two questions. When the owner elects to build the canals, once the canals are built, the Appalachian test no longer applies. Indeed, the most traditional, the oldest tests apply. In other words, once he chooses to build those canals, once having done so, the canals by their very existence become impressed with a navigation servitude. And if they are in that state,
just an alternate way in which a navigational servitude can be acquired as compared to the Appalachian Power.
I think so.
If that's true, how was it that in the early years of the 19th century, before the coming of the railroad, when this country was just honeycombed with canals, at least the eastern part of it, because that was the method of interstate travel, how were people allowed to charge tolls on those canals that were built by state or local governments or privately, by contrast to the federal government?
Those cases hold that reasonable tolls to pay for and support reasonable improvements to navigation may be done. In none of those cases, just as in none of the bridge cases.
I wasn't talking about cases. I was just talking about the historic facts. I'm interested to know there are cases, because I didn't know.
There are cases which hold, indeed, even more than that, the cases approving bridges over navigable water. None of those say, and none of them...
Canals constructed, not by the federal government, but by either state or local government, or by private people, which were connected necessarily to interstate highways, natural or artificial. How could tolls be charged if there was a free navigational servitude?
Two reasons. Number one, perhaps the development of those in the United States was of somewhat more importance than it is now, simply as a matter of policy. And number two, I do not think that the charging of tolls is necessarily tantamount to a negation of the existence of a navigation service.
That's conceding that the respondent in this case could charge you a fee for shrimping, isn't it?
I didn't hear your question, sir.
Aren't you then conceding that the respondent in this case could charge you a price for coming in there?
No, sir. I am not conceding that at all.
You still have the toll houses along the old Chesapeake Canal that was privately owned by George Washington and some of his friends?
I'm sure that we do. I'm not familiar with them, but again, I do not believe that, although I think that though it's quite questionable whether or not those cases would pass muster before this court now. Nevertheless, there was never in those cases said that on those navigable waters there was not a public right to navigate. These people do not seek to charge tolls. They seek to bar the public entirely.
Well, you haven't offered them any money so far.
We don't have a lot to offer.
Thank you. Thank you, gentlemen. The case is submitted. We'll hear